This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 324 of the Countdown Podcast, where we're on a boat, bitch! My name is Wayne.
Saw that one coming. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And today's topic, before we begin recording, has been the subject of some discussion.
Exactly. You see, my brief that I wrote down was top 10 films with a boat in it, right? Whereas Paul said, and then played back like fucking role from last week to say you're an asshole, was boat films.
It's funny. I didn't say you're an asshole, but boy, was it heavily implied. When Wayne heard,
you said it with your eyes.
Top 10 boat movies, top 10 boat films.
Yeah.
And then I went and said, top 10 films set on a boat. You're like, yeah.
Yeah, but I was just, we were spitballing, man.
So Wayne has done top 10 films which had a boat in the background at some point during proceedings.
No, there was a prominent boat scene in the film. Bitch, please. I guess I treated it more like top 10 boat scenes.
Well, I went with like films which are predominantly set on a boat. Obviously, there are some scenes that can be on land or whatever else, but it's all about the boating and the ocean.
A lot of mine are like that.
Well, then you're probably okay.
Probably not. Let's see how it goes.
It's a classic episode of The Countdown. It's like we're harkening back to episodes circa 0 to 250.
I think the folks are going to have a lot of fun with this anyway, just to hear all the shitting.
We may disable the vote count for this week then, if we're playing from two different pools.
Let's make the call. So I'll have to ditch. Just vote for Paul.
We won't do that. We'll just say that vote won't count. Maybe we'll just do it for shits and giggles, but yeah, it won't count towards the overall tally. Go. How's that sound? Therefore, we can just have at it and just mock each other mercilessly for stupid decisions that you made.
I suspect you'll still win and then you'll go, damn it, no, we should have counted it. That's what I think will happen, but okay.
Well, I won't deny the second part. All right, well, without any further ado, let's kick off the episode with the segment that starts, well, all of them. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
The Recount, where we hear from you, Paul.
Something different. Got a message on Instagram. We're not very active on Instagram, and it's one I drop the ball on a lot. But and I won't give the full name because I didn't ask for permission to read this. But this is from Tugan, who said, just came across your podcast a few days ago. I can't get enough. The banter is amazing, super uplifting. Movie knowledge is on point. The cackling laugh is exactly what I need. Please keep up the great work.
So there's something you never hear.
Yeah, well, I thought you might like to hear that the laugh did not put someone off. It actually attracted someone
nice,
to the show.
Nice.
All right, and then the only other bit of feedback is lots of feedback is around the topic last week's top 10 summer movie blockbusters. And here is what the group on the Facebook community, the only place you can vote, had to say. John Huslander said, I'm going to go with Paul on this one. Wayne had me until he had Batman as his number one.
No doubt, boo.
Because I did my ACL on the day it came out in the US.
Okay, well, I don't think that's my bad. That's fine. Vote any way you want.
I did think that was a bit unfortunate. Luke James Human said, unfortunately, despite Wayne's continued and admirable defense of Kate Capshaw, it was not enough to make his Thomas Mapother the fourth sponsored list this week's winner.
Let's just hark on that for a second. Yeah. Absolutely, that's what lost me this one.
It did.
The 20 Tom
the final
movies.
Vote was 38 to 27 in favor of me. There's so many people were like, Wayne had so much T to the C on the list.
I'm fine with that.
And David Power, for some reason, hated your choice of Face Off, which is just ridiculous. And T2, which is bog average, he says, at number two.
See, that's a contrarian right there.
Well, Jason from the Binge Movies podcast, good friend of the show, just said, absolutely, I had it way too low. So, and even you had it, T2 was too low. So there's a contrary opinion in that regard.
Yeah.
Jonathan Kidd, however, did say Batman 89 gets a vote, and I'll stand with Wayne for Face Off all day long.
What up, my man?
Troy Spinner called me out for basically saying The Matrix was a summer blockbuster because he reckons it came out in March. I'm like, did it?
Did it?
I didn't even look
at
the date of that one. I just assumed it was like May onwards. So, All right, well, fair enough if I got caught on that one. Again, Joshua Aglin said, well, Paul gets my vote because Wayne had way too much cruise.
Sure.
And then Nicole Presley, a normally a card-carrying member of the Wayne voting box, said, Wayne, how can I defend this madness? Paul, got to go to Paul, Alien, Mad Max, and Avengers. So
you can't win them all.
No, you can't.
Or in my case, many.
It has blown out. I think it's 11-7 now with a tie.
Just boom, right ahead.
So I am on a bit of a tear. I'm sure that we'll self-correct over the next few weeks because that's what our listeners like to do.
I'm not counting the chickens on this list, but never mind. Okay.
We shall see, even if this list is a dead list, regardless. So thank you to everyone who got back to us, and we'll have a lot of feedback because this topic generated a lot of feedback on the line, as you like to say, Wayne.
Nice.
At the end, so I'll get the side eye from Wayne as I risk reading a little bit extra at the end. But let's get into it then for this topic this week, the top 10 films set on a boat. Boat films! Boat films!
Boat films with a four of a boat net. I just fucking it.
Get your towels ready, it's about to go down. Everybody in the place hit the fucking deck. But stay on your motherfucking toes. We running this, let's go.
I'm on a boat, I'm on a boat. Everybody look at me, cause I'm sailing on a boat. I'm on a boat, I'm on a boat. Take a good hard look at the
motherfucking boat.
Right, yeah, sorry, what I meant to say was the top 10 films on a boat.
All right.
There we are. This is the subject of this week.
Kind of sounded like you were on a boat.
Okay, sure.
Under the galley.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have already established how this has not been established. So
maybe I should go first, since clearly I'm going to get the ire over here.
Excellent. Lead us away then.
Actually, my number 10 I do have to apologize for, but not for the reasons you think. It's actually hitting both our briefs.
Okay.
However, I have to apologize for choosing it because at the time I saw this film, I really thought it was a great film and I didn't know anything about the protagonist.
You're not going
to
say Speed 2.
No, I'm going to say Under Siege.
Oh, that's on my list.
Dude. Under Siege.
Oh, sorry. I think what we meant to do here was...
Seagal Watch.
Well... so far as I did watch Seagal, yeah. The Under Siege, people, is where Steven Seagal, in 1992, before we knew he was a fuck knuckle, cooks up a storm in the galley of the USS Missouri, and he's like a, you know, Gary Busey is this crooked fucking high-ranking officer who lets terrorists on the boat, and all kinds of bad shit happens, mutiny, gets fucked up, but Steven Seagal saves the day because he knows how to throw knives and fuck Erika Eleniak. So...
How could you describe that film any better? I agree. As far as films that are basically set on a boat goes, it's fun. It's entertaining. It's probably his biggest budget and most accessible film. You know, I had a soft spot for Mark for Death, but I rewatched it again and probably 3 or 4 years ago. Went, this is not that good either.
Bumper cloud.
I don't ever want to watch Under Siege again because I know I'll fucking hate it because of everything I know about Steven
Seagal.
Absolutely.
You can't watch them.
Which includes...
Oh, no.
Seagal Watch.
Just play this!
Impromptu proper Seagal Watch
oh,
now.
God. All
right. Now, I can't remember. Yes. I need to give some love to the Facebook community and the gentleman from there who brought this to our attention. Julio for the Contrarians podcast.
Julio.
Put up the link to Hollywood actor Steven Seagal joins pro-Kremlin party, proposes tougher laws.
On what?
So he's now a member of a Soviet Russian political party.
I'm not one bit surprised because he's like buds with fucking, what's his name, Putin.
Yep. So yeah, pro-Kremlin. Surprise. Not running against him, running for him.
He's a piece of shit. Look.
He received a party membership card of an alliance named Just Russia Patriots for Truth on Saturday, 2 or 3 weeks ago. A video released by the party showed. It was formed early this year when three leftist parties, all which support Putin, merged into one. And Seagal, a Russian citizen since 2016, proposed to crack down businesses which damage the environment. Do you reckon Seagal moved to Russia because it's a non-extradition country?
He moved to Russia because people there don't have normal TV and don't know what a fuck knuckle he is. No one knows that he was a secret cop in some fucking bullshit lawman crapness show. No one knows that everyone thinks he's a dickhead. They, you know, or maybe they do and they don't care. I don't know. The point is, American like star in Russia would be a bigger hit than American dickhead in America. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, even in this sort of crazy reality TV obsessed world, even no one's watching a TV show about fucking Steven Seagal, as we proved with said law enforcement show.
Where's he got left to go?
Goodbye, good riddance. Fuck off, Steven Seagal.
All right,
then. On to my list, then.
Please.
My number 10 is one starring your favorite Spaniard and my favorite Spaniard, Sean Connery, in The Hunt for Red October.
Good one. I was wondering about this one. Number 10, you say?
Yeah.
Not bad.
Obviously, submarine film. Submarines are boats.
U-boat, if you will.
There you are. Yep. There you go. It's been a long time since I've watched this movie, but I do remember it being a very tense, claustrophobic thriller.
Oh, yeah.
First of the Jack Ryan films, as played by Wayne's absolute secret crush,
Alec Baldwin.
So, John McTiernan film. I expect this one to pop up higher on your list.
Actually, it's an honorable mention.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I guess if you're putting in any film which had a boat in the background, it wouldn't make the top 10.
Well, it almost did. It was. I had too many U-boat movies in my list, so that's a problem. So, yeah, okay.
There's at least one other one in my list, I will say. I hope it's in yours as well.
Did you think that was this your favorite iteration of Jack Ryan, or is that going to the Chris Pine one? I love the Chris Pine one, by the way.
Fuck off. Was that Shadow Recruit?
Yeah, I liked that show. It was a great show.
I mean, Harrison Ford, come on. Clear and Present Danger.
You would think.
Patriot Games, yeah, I think, wins.
Yeah. Don't mind a bit of John Krasinski these days.
Oh, well, yeah, the TV. I wasn't even counting that because I was thinking film versions. Yeah, John Krasinski's great in that role, too. I like him, too. Not really rating Ben Affleck's Sum of All Fears, Jack Ryan.
I liked that he had a Palm Pilot.
Well, after that bombshell, we should just move on to your number 9.
Speaking of bombshells, everyone, my number 9 is a movie with, well, it's the Q boat scene in A World Is Not Enough. The World Is Not Enough. It's a James Bond movie, and the whole opening, do you remember this one?
I've been trying to forget it.
Oh, man. First of all, okay, The World Is Not Enough is the one where Denise Richards was Dr. Christmas Jones.
Yep.
Okay. Depending on how you look at it, it's either a plus or a minus. I don't know.
Like, is Jones my Christmas?
No, he said something like, Christmas only comes once a year. That's what he said at the end of it when he was fucking her. It's really, really bad. But, I mean, that part of it anyway. Yeah, but
really bad. Movie, Wayne wished he thought of himself.
Absolutely. No, this film is, I actually quite like it. Of the Brosnan Bonds.
Come on.
Of the Brosnan Bonds, he goes, this one, then Tomorrow Never Dies. No, sorry. He goes, Goldeneye, then Tomorrow Never Dies, and probably this one.
It goes Goldeneye, everything else. Cliff, everything else.
Yeah. Goldeneye is by far the best. But this one here, the opening scene really made me shit my pants, okay? Let me tell you about it. The Q-boat is this tiny-ass little boat. What happens is this assassin chick busts a cap and then escapes in a boat on the Thames right outside MI5. Bond is, you know, chilling at Q branch or whatever, jumps in this boat, and he actually shoots out of the building into it. It's a small black boat that only has him in it, all right? Then he goes, boom, and this actually boat is pretty cool. It can bounce across the water, back, forth, this, that, really looking cool. Can go underwater and fire missiles, except the missiles were, like, fucked up. It didn't work out because it was still in development.
How long was this scene in the film?
This scene, I reckon you've got about 5 minutes. If you're lucky. I reckon five. There's always a boat scene in a Bond movie.
Bitch.
Yo, this was so, like, wicked looking, this scene, because he even adjusted his tie when he went underwater, which I thought was a great move. But at the end, he actually
doesn't even wear ties anymore.
I know, but I like the fact that he does. See, it now goes. What I'm saying is, he actually jumps from this boat as it launches in the air and hangs onto this fucking balloon, goes up, shoots it, blows it. All sorts of shit happens, but it is one of the coolest openings to a movie I've ever seen. Not just a Bond film. This one is the shit. And yes, I love it. It's a. Yes, okay. Boat.
I apologize, ladies and gentlemen.
Entire ass.
Compromise the entire show.
You should probably suck on my dick.
Right. We go from highbrow entertainment like that, which features a boat for 5 minutes.
That's right.
To equally highbrow entertainment, which features a boat for the entire length of the film. It's called Deep Rising.
Fuck off! Are you talking about that Treat Williams movie? Yep. Fuck off!
And Funk
Mine was it. Better! Mine was better, motherfucker!
Directed by the Mummy director, Stephen Sommers. This is a fun, fun monster movie where a bunch of hijackers board this boat, but everyone's basically dead on the boat already and disappeared. And then they are subsequently picked off one by one by whatever this creature is that is stalking them through the corridors of the boat. And it's fun as fuck.
No, I'm trying to remember now, because Treat Williams, I've always considered him this guy with this cartoonishly, he looks like a cartoon pilot. That's his face. It is handsome, but it's very like classically butt chin handsome. So,
as someone with a butt chin, I resent that.
No, yeah, you have a handsome butt chin yourself.
Thank you.
I remember, actually, all I can remember about this film is that Treat Williams had a shotgun and he racked it with one hand, like, I hit once. And it was, there's a lot of.
Remember Famke Jensen?
Famke was in it, wasn't she? Yeah. Okay. I'm just surprised. This is.
Kevin J. O'Connor, the perennial Stephen Sommers. Hey, Benny! He's Benny in the Mummy. That guy.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. Oh, hence the same director.
Where's
Studi? Where Studi was in it. This is like Leviathan-y, but not.
Cliff Curtis, because he's in every film like this.
Of course, yes. I'm surprised you remember this one, bro.
It was fun. Fun film. I vividly remember watching it at the cinema. And
this is like, you know what it is? It's like Hard Rain. It's like Hard Rain. It's like kind of a thing. Yeah.
I'm not defending it.
Okay, no, that's an interesting
primarily set on a boat. And in fact, I think the whole thing is on the water. And I had a lot of fun with it. And if I had 90 minutes, like of all the films on this list, if I had 90 minutes only, because a lot of my good films on this list are really long and would rule themselves out on that basis. I'm watching this one.
Okay. All right. Well, that was a surprise.
Okay.
And quite delightful, I think.
Thank you. I see what you're doing here.
Huh?
He's going to be nice because he knows he's so far down the list of being
shown. No. Listen, no one likes it when I'm nice to you. They only like it when we fight. So eat my balls.
we'll see how many times he's invited to taste Wayne's junk this week.
Hold your breath. My number eight is... Now, this one's a little closer, but it's still one of those things that loses me a show. It is a boat called the Nautilus from the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Oh,
the Dumb Guzzler podcast literally said this. I was saving it for the fucking feedback.
Oh, please.
This
please,
is gold.
Please, bring it on.
Wayne puts the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen in the top five.
Well, now, to be fair... The Nautilus is the headquarters of the League. So there's actually a lot set on this boat. So I would say it's almost primarily set, except that they go
London to... London is the primary setting.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of boat scenes, way more than the Q boat. Okay.
Yes. But I think we could just add that as the unspoken proviso of everything else on your list. I fucking hope so.
I think you could sell that this is set a lot on a boat, primarily almost, I would say, on a boat, because they actually deal from the headquarters, go underwater, go into a town on the
Change
boat.
Change my mind, this week's vote should count.
I'm fine with that, okay? Yes, the submarine is created by Captain Nemo, and it's used by him to explore the seas and sink warships. It is known by him as the Sword of the Ocean, and it is the coolest silver-looking, like, Art Nouveau-styling interior with some Hindu architecture on the exterior. It has a Nautilus car that sprang out of it, and it was steampunk design all the way through. You have, like, gaslit candle torches in the wall that are controlled by a wall switch. You know that's cool. But more importantly, I love,
I love
the whole film, okay? I actually have no idea why people have a shit on this film. It's actually, like, great. It's almost perfect in how weirdly not it's convinced. It's like
wow.
it's steampunk, but at the time where it was
ballsy,
fly,
stupid but ballsy,
and it's taking all the famous characters from history and putting this shit together. The bad guy's Moriarty. That's the shit.
That's the premise, which is intriguing about this whole
thing.
Everything else about it in execution.
King Solomon's Mines, motherfucker, is the lead, shit. And motherfucking Dr. Hyde and shit. It's the shit.
This film was so bad it killed Sean Connery's acting desire.
Excellent swan song for Sean Connery.
Basically, I know Sean Connery died earlier this year or late last year, I can't remember when it was, but he actually died in real life, effectively for us all, the day this
was
film
the crown jewel of his career, okay? So there you go. Listen, folks, if there's anyone out there who liked this movie, I need to hear from you, okay? I'm just getting hate up in here.
No, there's two or three people have come to your aid.
You reckon?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, hit me up, y'all. Hit me up. Hit the whole show up.
All right, well, we're going to move on to my number eight now.
Please.
And of course it is.
What the fuck? What is it? This is the 12th time you played this, you stank pussy ho.
Under Siege.
That's what you did for this? Yep. Jesus. All right, you know what?
Let's
vote. I'll win after this shit. My number seven, everyone.
I dare say we're disappointing our listeners at this point in time. Let's see if we can redeem ourselves.
I'm not too... enthusiastic about that. Okay. My number seven is The Italian Job. In the beginning, the whole beginning was actually the boat thing, that massive boat chase. Remember they blew up the state? It was in Venice. It was set in Venice.
Okay.
And it went all through the ceilings of the fucking thing and landed in the boat. But they duped people by letting people think it went in the water. Then they get this massive boat chase, which takes up the first chunk of the film.
How chunk? Give me
6 minutes. At least 6 minutes. This is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of, and I don't think I'm accelerating here, time. Oh, and I believe there was a boat scene later on as well. So it's two boat scenes. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is on brief.
I can barely go on. This
I think
is ridiculous.
It's fine. I think it's totally fine.
This is like the old days of the show.
This is actually quite interesting for me, and I hope everyone... Because you can feel Paul's wrath.
more consternated disbelief.
It's a mix of both.
Kids haven't chat today. It might be constipated disbelief.
It's okay. I lit a candle in the can. Yeah, Italian Job, man. Italian Job. Actually, wait a minute.
What?
The beginning, even like towards the middle bit as well, when they take out, like they're in the ice and shit, there's some boat shit going on as well. There's quite a few boat shits going on in this movie, Paul. I'm telling you, man. It should have been called the boat shit.
Boat shit. Right.
Please, your number
My number seven is actually a film which takes place entirely on a fucking boat. Wait. I mean, no, I tell a lie. The first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes of the film take place on land. It's called Triangle. It's directed by Christopher Smith. I think we watched this as...
Wait, you liked that movie?
In my first watch, I'm like, eh.
That was shit! No?
A lot of people love this film, Wayne. A lot of people love this movie. Tread carefully, my friend.
I mean, it was... Nah!
Solid three... I upped it from 3 stars to 3.5 when we rewatched it for a listener request.
I guess it's so horror-y. It wasn't really
it's horror-y and it's sci-fi-y it's clever. And it, when you really think about it, it works quite well. And there are some great stunning moments in the film. But yeah, it basically follows a small charter boat which comes across a derelict boat offshore. They see someone on board. So they go on to kind of work out what's happening here. And they start being picked off one by one by this masked assailant. Mm-hmm. And it goes from there in very unpredictable ways.
I will say that there's no way you can call this one.
Nah.
And the actual ambitiousness of how complex the plot is and how much it asks of you is quite impressive. Melissa George, the light?
That's it.
Yeah.
Melissa George is the main cast member. I think there is a Liam Hemsworth as a small role in the film. Won't recognize too many other people in it. And it's directed by Christopher Smith, who has a pretty good pedigree for lower budget sort of horror thrillers from the UK, actually. Mm. He is. So, yeah.
Okay. I'm just surprised that I didn't know you liked this one so much. There you are.
Good flick.
Well, my number six is indeed Titanic.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wayne chasing the votes.
I'm not chasing the votes. Someone said that they would actively not.
Again, you're cheating me out of some recount stuff here, but Jordan Davidson, top of the page of the show, said, whoever puts fucking Titanic on their list high, I will lose my vote.
Yeah.
And then was swiftly answered by another listener of the show.
Oh, really? I didn't see that part.
Which is very cool, I think. Yeah, it's good fun. Jamie Davies, who said, Titanic is a masterpiece and will determine who gets my vote this week, should even things out.
Well, I agree, because I was thinking about it. Because, you know,
wait, you think Titanic is a masterpiece?
I loved it when I saw it.
Really?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Over the years, because it's so popular, it's like Avatar and stuff like that. People like to take shots at it like after it's been so long because it was so successful and all that sort of shit, right? I liked Avatar too. I loved Avatar.
Yeah, Avatar, right? I've cooled on. Titanic, I was never warm on.
Okay, now I think I remember this because we always talk about Paul and Alexi when the guy gets chopped up by the propeller, all right?
He does not get chopped up by the propeller.
Or gets hit, hits the propeller.
He bounces off it. And spins in a discordant way.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
It's a great shot, which makes the trailer, and we would laugh at it every time it came up. So when it happened, when I actually saw it at the cinema, the only time I've ever seen this film, in circa, was it 1997?
I think so. Yes, it was 97.
There you go. I let out a little cheer.
Yeah, actually, I've heard it. I've heard that cheer, okay? But more than that, the movie itself, okay, because I do believe this is where they started action romance. And I think I heard Ben Affleck say that shows like Armageddon, which I think came after this and stuff like that.
Armageddon was 99. Yeah, I say.
That was inspired by the fact that you could have action and a proper romance in a movie, yep. And that's why, you know, the beat with him and Liz and shit was such a big deal in that one. I know, I hate it.
Animal crackers,
fucking animal crackers. Anyway, but yes, yeah, so this movie here, first of all, it's long as shit.
Too long.
And then the boats at the end, or the crashes at the end.
Too long.
But he did make it meaningful. Even the Bill Paxton stuff was good, I thought, all right? Nah. Everyone thinks the old woman's a bitch, but like the
complete and utter
complete
spud.
Wench. Yep. But it itself, I actually, even the Billy Zane like going after a bad guy, like he's such an asshole and he had a gun. Oh, that was just cool. I actually was enthralled the entire
Billy
time.
Billy Zane, there's a man's career who just went fucking south fast.
Well, I actually have Dead Calm on. Is it on I had this as a honorable mention, and that's the first time I saw him, right? And it was
great in that film.
Yeah. He was great in that film. Yeah, you're right. It did sort of. It was Zoolander, and then it went. What happened?
You can't really count Zoolander as a big
role.
I know.
That's why it was a joke. But like I haven't seen a lot of him. Yeah, you're right. Maybe he's just living the good life.
His career faded as quickly as his hairline.
You know what? I was always a big fan of his because in The Phantom, he was completely bald.
Yep.
Right? And I was bald. I was bald. Right? And I'm like, hey, you can just be a bald actor, and they'll put a wig on you. It's fine.
Plenty of bald actors, but all right. All right, that does kind of surprise me. I'm shocked that you love that film so much. But like I said, that would have got you a few votes. My number six, I'm totally stealing your thunder here. I know it's going to be on the list. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Life of Pi.
Dude, of course, totally on my list. Totally on my list, man.
Great. What I'll say about it is stunningly visually, a visually stunning film, I should say, with some great beats to it and thoroughly entertaining, despite the fact it's basically a kid on a boat with a tiger after a ship goes down and kills everyone that he knows. Or is it? Is it all in his head? You just don't know. That's the kind of genius of the film. And, you know, supposedly unfilmable book. So
Yeah.
Well done. Well done, Ang Lee. He's a guy who's hit or miss, and this was a hit.
Totally. Did you read the book by any chance?
Yeah.
And? Liked it?
A long time ago. Well, it's not a very big book. You can read it in two sittings, you know.
Okay. Well, I actually think that this is one of the movies that I am actually upset that I didn't see in the movies and also Agreed. Didn't see in the 3D. Yeah. I don't like 3D that much.
I did watch it in 3D on my 3D TV at the time.
Ah. You never see those anymore, do you?
No, they were a fad.
That's it? Faded.
You're gone.
Ah, unfortunate. Yeah. But the actual film itself, it's just so weird that as I see it over and over and think about it over and over, it actually becomes more complex. Like, for example, the island that he visits, that carnivorous island with the cool looking everything, that turns out signifies like religion, because it says like the island gives so much during the day and takes it all away at night, and it's about sort of the idea between a religion is, you know, needed by people to save them, but religion needs people to actually love it in order for it to exist and stuff like that. Yeah, things like it goes very, very deep, and I think I know that it's actually just all in his head. It has to be that way.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because the monkey floats in on bananas which don't float, and how did the fucking, you know, and I think the idea that.
But I think it works both ways. You can totally interpret it either way as being literal or being metaphorical, or slash a product of his either
it's him
fractured mind,
yeah, fractured,
or a deliberate choice he's made to coping mechanism. What's the word I'm looking for here?
Sanitized
to metaphorize.
Yeah,
what he went through.
Right, and that's why.
That word up, but
well,
know
that's what I like about it. And there's actually this undercurrent of the whole film, because they never tell you why the boat actually sank. They just told you it sank.
Yep.
And I think that's the life metaphor.
He doesn't know why it sank.
No, he even says like, "I don't know why it sank. It doesn't really matter, because that's what life is like. Some shit happened. You don't know why it happened, and it probably didn't mean anything anyway. And the shit you do probably doesn't mean anything anyway. So it's a question of just what do you do? And that's what this is. So that's why I love Life of Pi. Obviously, it's very high on my list.
All right. Yeah. We'll see just how high when we get there. All right. So that's halfway through list. Wayne, what is your number five?
My number five is U571.
Wow. Okay.
Now, I actually really liked the film, and I'm not quite sure why no one else liked it. Apparently,
I didn't hate it, but it's not on my list.
The British government chucked a huge shit at this movie, saying that it totally like sullied the the memory of those soldiers and things like that, because it's sort of
McConaughey.
Yeah, yeah, Matthew McConaughey, man. And this film is about a U.S. submarine's attempt to steal an Enigma machine from a German U-boat. And apparently, like I said, it was very inaccurate. But it's got Matthew McConaughey, Bill Paxton, Harvey Keitel, John Bon Jovi.
Shot!
That's right. Dude, this whole movie he was living on a prayer. So
he was one of dead or alive.
He was. And this movie, by the we could go for fucking months on this shit.
No, you can't. I'm done.
He went down in a blaze of glory.
There you go.
All kinds of shit.
I mean, I already made that reference by saying.
Did you say that? Shut down. You're right. Okay.
But other than that, I'm gone. I couldn't do anything more.
Well, that should just be what this is about. That should be my whole description. But no.
Whereas, you know, Wayne just hopes that people he knows are slippery when wet.
Oh, they see, this is all. It could go on way longer than you think.
Right? I had to change the tack.
It doesn't matter. That's what this is about. So anyway. But you should know, apart from everyone being pissed about it, the movie actually won an Oscar for sound design,
okay,
which is unusual. But it was a really, really, there's a lot of like planes coming in and they're trying to shoot it with a fucking cannon, that kind of tense shit.
Definitely takes place on a boat. I applaud your choice. If you want to hear a little bit of inside this one, listen to the end of the episode. It's all I'll say.
Fuck off. Pulling back the curtain like a bitch. Okay.
Because I'm just one of those poor people who just hit stop the moment the music starts playing to miss out.
Okay, your number fucking.
My number five is a film which takes place entirely on a boat. 100%. There's every frame of the film's on a boat, Wayne.
Doesn't really sound like it hits the brief for gone.
It's an amazing film. It's from 1972. Yes, I'm right. Directed by Ronald Neame. It's called The Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, really? Oh, he's gone classicist.
I love this movie, man. This is one of my favorite films. Like, you know when you were young and you were allowed to stay up on a Saturday night?
Yeah.
And your parents, right around the age where they start going out and leaving you at home?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say 11, 12, somewhere. It's different this age, parents of young children.
Really?
But when I was that age, I was responsible enough to be left in the house by myself when I was about 12 years old.
12 years?
Yeah.
Mate.
And this film was on, so I stuck it. I watched it because, you know, I'm up late. It's like, it's a Saturday night. It's
on
like
TV?
It's on TV.
Yeah, it's on TV, yeah.
And it's pretty long from vague memory. It's 2 hours long, so it would have been on TV at least 2.5, if not 2.75, right?
And you nailed the whole thing.
Watched the whole thing. I'm like, I was amazed at how good this film, which is a big luxury liner, strikes a iceberg, I think. Capsizes,
whatever. Sounds a little Titanic-y, but
yeah. Capsizes, and then people who survive the capsizing and it flips over, right, have to climb through the boat decks to the hull at the bottom.
And cut out.
And get out.
Yeah. Right?
Gene Hackman's in it. Shelley, what's her name? Shelley Winters, Roddy McDowell, Ernest Borgnine. So it's all these classical actors who all, with the exception of Gene Hackman, who's obviously retired, but have all passed now. And Leslie Nielsen has a small bit as the captain of the ship.
I remember when he was doing serious shit. Well, I don't remember. I remember hearing that he did.
So it's forget the cast. It's just a great story. They remade it. Wolfgang Petersen remade it in the mid-aughts. And it's a fucking shit stain on this film.
But that's a cool experience, like, though, because I remember I had a similar thing with The Towering Inferno, where I remember watching
I've never
that.
Seen that one.
Yeah, I remember watching it because I don't think I've seen this one, right? And I was just like, this is an old movie that I shouldn't care about, but that was surprisingly good. And
did you really like Towering Inferno?
I remember liking it. I couldn't tell you much about the movie now.
Maybe we should like trade off.
Yeah,
you should watch that. Poseidon, and I'll watch Towering Inferno. We can bring it back in a special ep or something.
That's not bad. Let's do that.
Okay.
Word. Okay, very nice. My number four is Crimson Tide.
Low.
Is that a CHNT that you're doing? Is that the deal? Or is that the actual score or something else?
Yeah, the score.
Oh, okay, you're an asshole. Now, people, this movie, after the Cold War, it's set, and it's this a breakaway Russian Republic with nuclear warheads becomes like a possible worldwide threat. And then you got U.S. submarine Captain Frank Ramsey, that's Gene Hackman. He signs on to this relatively green but highly recommended commander, or CARM. What's he called?
The XO.
XO, right? Denzel Washington. And they're in this U-boat, the USS Alabama, and it may be the only ship able to stop a possible Armageddon because they're waiting for this message to completely come through, but the comms are down, and it seems to say, stop, don't shoot
it gets halfway through a message, and it can be interpreted either way.
Yes. So the captain's like, well, Gene Hackman's like, well, fuck it, we're going to fire the nukes like the previous order. And he's like, no, man. And it becomes a mutiny, man. It becomes a mutiny on the ship.
Yeah, so Denzel leads a mutiny with half the crew, and the other half the crew are loyal to the captain.
That's right.
There's fucking George Zanza and Viggo Mortensen.
Aragorn,
And there's so many, and it's directed by Tony Scott. And, you know, this is the best, in my mind, this is the best Tony Scott film.
This one?
Because nothing lends itself to the claustrophobic tightness of the way he shoots films than a submarine movie.
Absolutely. Actually, it's a good point.
It's a perfect pairing of a director's style with the subject matter.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, to me, is the pinnacle of U-boat films.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and there's a few.
Yeah, there'll be a few people jumping up and down and saying, you motherfuckers haven't mentioned U-boot.
Dust Boot.
The Wolfgang Petersen film, which...
Have you seen that one?
I have watched it, but I watched it once many, many years ago. It's 3.5 hours, and I was like, maybe I should rewatch it again, and then I laughed at myself because I don't have 3.5 hours to spare at the moment. But yeah, I couldn't include it. It was on my original cut of the list, and I cut it because I'm like, no, if I'm being truthful, I can't remember enough about that film. But I think that is the grandfather. And it wasn't that old, wasn't it? Was it mid-90s?
Is that like, I remember that when it came out, it was a big thing. But was it because of, like, it was a drama kind of thing on the boat thing, much the same? Or was it like, what was it? Like?
Well,
because
I think it's the most authentic portrayal of what life's like on a submarine. So.
Okay. By the way, I can never do that.
No way.
Could you imagine being that coped up and then if one guy farts?
I'm a dude who got married fucking 2 months ago, and I can't have my ring be stuck on my finger because I feel claustrophobic. So
it's got fuck all to do with claustrophobia.
No, but that's what I couldn't handle on a submarine.
Oh man, dude, to actually like. But even the sleeping quarters, they actually just fold down. Like there's a bed that so the guy's ass is right on top, like 2 inches on top of your face.
No, I know you're all for the ass,
not a dude's ass.
So what, you've been lying to me all these?
Not this week. No. but no, sorry. Back to Crimson Tide. Yes, absolutely, man. I've heard someone describe this movie like this once. The enemy isn't the water, it isn't the Russians, because you never even see a Russian officer in this whole movie, right? It's actually the fog of war. That's actually kind of that's why it's cool about this film.
Danger runs deep.
That's right. Oh yeah. Great byline. So yes, absolutely. Crimson Tide.
And let's not forget the fact there's two powerhouse actors. Gene Hackman, probably just past the prime, but still a wonderful actor. And Denzel coming into his prime. Two guys who can command a screen.
Oh, you're buying the whole thing. And because it was back then as well, right? There was even like, they mention everything. At the end, they talk about Aspaloosas that they're born white and they turn black and stuff. There's like actually like racial tension as an undercurrent in what they're saying to each other. Absolutely. As they're waiting for orders. It's like,
which for the mid-90s would make sense in the Navy.
It was perfect. But the thing is like...
Sadly, probably still would be... relevant to that.
Unfortunately, but it wouldn't, like, it played, in the 90s, it played more like, you know, you heard that kind of thing every now and then. If you said it now, it's like, holy shit, now the lead character is a racist. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't have played as well, the same.
Yeah, I mean,
there would have been that.
It'd be an extra reason to hate Gene Hackman's character.
Well, yeah, but you respected that he was this, like, you know, naval officer guy, but then you also felt he was a bit gung-ho, whereas Denzel's the guy who's trying to save the world. He's like, nope, we have to be army. If they say fire, we fire. That's how it is, right? And that's why it was cool. So, yeah.
I actually even like, I do like the end of the film when you know, if you haven't watched this film in 26 years, shame on you, and I'm going to give it away. So, fast forward 1 minute.
Yeah.
I love the fact they meet up afterwards.
Yes, that's the best, it's not the best bit of the
and
film. But
and there's a bit of respect both ways for the other's perspective. So, Gene Hackman could be like, you fucking cunt, you fucking mutinied against me and stopped me from firing those missiles. Mm-hmm. And Denzel could have been just like, eat a dick, motherfucker. Much like you would be.
Yes.
Right? Whereas...
I'd like to think I'd be cool, but I wouldn't be.
Whereas they kind of begrudgingly respect each other's opinion, and he walks away walking his dog.
There's even a smile, bro. There's even there's a proper, like, gentlemanly sort of
there's an acknowledgement of you were doing your job, I was doing mine, and we can both, we're never going to work together again, but we both understand where each other came from.
Because what happened at the end?
They didn't fire the missile. Denzel.
But did they dishonorably discharge anyone or anything like that? I think
from vague memory, Gene Hackman's character retired.
That's what happened. One of them was leaving.
Yeah, or maybe even Denzel's character was retiring, but he wasn't dishonorably discharged or anything like that.
I seem to feel like Denzel was still in the army. And
I think
like,
it was Gene Hackman saying, well, the Navy's moved past me. It was Navy, not Army.
Yeah, Navy, of course. Yeah, totally. That was cool. That was actually, it wasn't the best thing of the movie, but it's a great aspect of the movie. So, yeah.
All right, there we are. All right, cool. That's your four.
Three. Four.
Four. My number four, Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
Oh my God. That was a good one, though. I actually do remember that. They turned to shit real quick.
Was that, oh my God, I fucking forgot about this one?
No, I actually thought about it.
Because it looked like you were like, shit.
I did think about it.
Because when you weigh this one up versus, say, whichever shit James Bond film you had earlier.
The one that's coming up next is going to piss you off so hard, right? It's actually going to be, like, spectacular. So please.
Fucking changing the soundboard now.
I'm looking for a fucking, like, an honorable mention I can put in there, but I've already mentioned them all.
You're fat. Stupid. Eat it.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Curse
of the Black Pearl, obviously. Just a lightning in a bottle experience. Like, I know that this film has been diluted by its subsequent shit sequels, okay? And I don't much hate the second and third one. The fourth and fifth one had some cinematic abominations which should never have been made. But this one is directed by Gore Verbinski, with Johnny Depp turning in an absolute stellar performance as Captain Jack Sparrow.
Absolutely.
And I know not all the film takes place on a boat, but obviously it's primarily on boats.
After this next one, it's going to be great. It's going to be fine. Actually, yeah, you're right. This is kind of a seafaring film as opposed to set on a boat, but it's, you know, whatever.
What's commonality weighing between Crimson Tide and...
The World Is Not Enough?
Curse of the Black Pearl.
Okay.
Both are scored by Hans Zimmer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And both have stellar fucking scores. Now I have a debate which one I'm going to go out on in this episode.
Not because of the score.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. All
right. Well, which one do I go with? Do I go with Hans in this one or Hans with that one?
Okay.
Either way, it's Hansy.
Paul getting Hansy, not bad. Okay, well, you know what? I will tell you this about The Curse of the Black, whatever. Okay. The thing that happened at the end, in case anyone hasn't seen it, like the reveal. All right, fine. The fact that Johnny Depp is actually a fucking ghost and you only see it in the fucking mist or whatever, like in the sunlight.
Moonlight,
right? That was the shit, man. You just at no time during the whole film do you like, oh yeah, he is in keeping with being a ghost. So that's the best thing about the film.
It's great.
Also, just Johnny Depp's character.
Great film. And again, based on a Disney ride. How could something have been so fucking cool based on just a Disney ride?
Was it based on a Disney ride?
Yeah, have you not done it? Of course you haven't. You weren't in America when...
No.
I've done it.
Really?
Yep.
So wait, the movie came from the ride?
Yeah.
Not the ride came from the movie?
Nope.
The hell?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well that is good.
Same with The Haunted Mansion. Less successful, Eddie Murphy.
Doesn't always work. All right, my number three, people. Fantastic. Now remember, it's just a movie with a boat scene in it. And the boat scene is great. So Paul is going to have a problem with this, but it's The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Now remember. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Fuck yeah!
E-F-G-H-I-J-K-L-M-N-O-P. It's a brief.
Yeah, my brief was that movie with a boat in it, slut. Suck on balls! All right. Fine. I'm just going to tell you about the boat scene, okay? Because it easily, this is easily one of my favorite films. That's why it's number five. I was like, it had a boat in it, and it's one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Number what?
Number three.
Thank you.
Thank you. Number three. The boat scene itself, while not so much spectacular, instead charming. This is great. This is great. Army Hammer is a Soviet agent, and Henry Cavill is an American agent, and they're trying to get away from the bad guys on a boat at night in like some foreign-ass place like Italy. During the chase, Henry Cavill falls on the boat, while Army Hammer continues to get chased by the bad guys. He falls, like, Henry Cavill has to swim to the shore, gets inside a truck, happens to find a picnic basket, turns on some Italian song on the radio, and it's really, really cool because he decides to watch all this shit going through while he's in the fucking truck, and the shit blows up, and he ends up driving the truck onto the bad guy's boat and killing them. But it's all done with this like Italian song in the background, no more sound effects. Very, very cool, and one of my favorite boat scenes.
How long?
This one, I reckon you're going to...
In a 130-minute film.
I reckon 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, excellent.
Maybe five. Oh, I see. This whole time you were searching...
Insane in the memway.
Insane in his brain.
Insane in the memway.
Ball choke on my balls.
What?
Actually, that's really apt. Yeah, because you can choke on my balls.
The best part is that you don't even have to argue because you just let the soundbite do the argument for you.
Yeah, well, you've let the soundbite do a lot of the heavy lifting, which you shouldn't have in the past. Anyway, great movie, great film.
Choice.
And it's the reason I get upset when Guy Ritchie makes crap like Wrath of Man.
Yeah, well, very disappointing. I wouldn't say it's crap, it's just disappointing.
Crap.
My number three is a film which Tom Hanks was nominated as for the best actor for. Did not win because he'd already won it twice and apparently the Academy didn't have enough. It's directed by Paul Greengrass. It's Captain Phillips.
I still haven't seen this one.
It's fantastic. I think I really should. Yeah, and primarily for the performances both of Hanks and Bakad Abdi, leader of the... I think I did all right that one.
No, you did great.
As the leader of the terrorists who stormed this boat. And that is... It's a true story of the 2009 hijacking by Somali pirates of the US-flagged MV Marisk, Alabama. And was the first American cargo ship to be hijacked in 200 years. And obviously, Captain Phillips is played by Tom Hanks. And the role he goes through, the process he goes through to save his crew... And what he puts himself through to do so is worthy of this film alone.
Is this hard to watch, this film?
Yeah, it is in some ways, but it's not in a... I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, okay.
It's not that old. 8 years old.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the audience were interested, but you haven't seen it.
I'm thinking about...
There is a scene towards the end of the film, I'll just put it this way, which might be some of the best acting I've ever seen by anybody.
Big move, big call.
And I know I'm not a very good judge of great acting. You know, I'm the first to admit that. Like, I'm all about the story and I'm all about the camera work and cinematography and the score, yes. Yeah. But acting, I can often get by with people saying, this person can act for shit. I'm like, were they? You know, unless it's really bad or really good. The upper, Anthony Hopkins in The Father this last year. Oh, my God.
Was that the shit?
Well, I will talk about it in the next episode.
Okay.
I see the extremes and this is... right down the extreme end of amazing Tom Hanks in this film and particularly this one scene.
Okay.
Well worth a watch.
You've intrigued me.
Okay.
All right. Now, my number two is absolutely...
134 minutes on the ocean in a boat.
Again, we're working off different briefs, so if you could please lick my foreskin. All right.
There's another one for your bingo card at home.
Number two. This is a total, this is going to be your number one, and you already mentioned my number one. So... Jaws.
Yes.
All right.
100% accurate. Well done, sir.
Okay.
I'm glad it's here. Thank God. And you know what boat they didn't need to be on? Ben Gardner's boat.
No, I think I would use that one. Especially when I went back and watched pieces of it for this thing. I didn't know this, and I'm sure you mentioned this, but I didn't know. I just realized it. That scene in Jaws where Quint gets eaten has no score. There's actually no score in that scene. There's score everywhere else, but it's just arg, arg, and oh shit, and then oh damn, and that's it, but no fuck. I was like, oh, that's quite a surprise. I wonder if that was an early director and it would have been a choice not to score.
Oh, yeah,
it, right?
100%. Given that this score, like if you gave a shit about such things.
But even I know,
yeah, of course. One of the most famous scores. Somebody getting an 8 when you hear that ever shit. Of all time. But John Williams' score in this film. Watch the bit where they go out. They're all going out to hunt the shark and it's all exciting and like, oh, we're going to catch a big fucking fish. Yeah. It's so jaunty and...
That's the best thing about this film because you are lulled into that. Yeah. But even so, it's quite enjoyable. Like to hear that music and then...
Yeah. You know, it's very light and it's got all these very high notes and whatever else. And But then the contrast with the, I think, is it cello? Whatever. What is it playing?
Yeah, I feel like it's cello.
I'm like,
yeah, yeah. Sounds like it is.
with the dark and nasty and threatening, ominous tones of that, like the contrast totally. Between it is incredible. John Williams' work through and the late 70s is just,
yeah.
I mean, and 80s with Indiana Jones.
Hmm. Sharks in the water or sea creatures? I don't like that at all. Now, I mean,
sharks are scary, man.
No, but like just the idea that you are floating on top of the ocean and there's an abyss under you and anything could be in there and you can't see it until it's about a meter down and all you're seeing is eyes and teeth scares the fanny off me, man. Yep. That's like nasty. And that's, I think it's like everyone's like, that's why the movie like this is popular, but I hate that shit. That's why my people hardly ever go into the sea.
We get more than our fair share of shark attacks here in Australia. It was another one just the other day.
Oh, fuck. I haven't swum in the ocean in like 20 years. So forget about it.
I mean, proportionally, it's, your chances are pretty low. Listen, don't get me wrong.
I look like a seal, man. I'm telling you.
Like a hair.
Yes. I'm swimming on that. I'll eat that motherfucker.
Great choice. I'm very pleased it's made your list. And I'm glad you weren't stupid enough to leave it off. Yeah. Mine up too. Here's why I hate Crimson Tide.
Ah, Crimson Tide. Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, let's give us a recap. Wait.
Can't wait. Here we go.
And I've stolen your number one, which we both stole each other's number one. So
let's just talk about that later. Okay, number one. Sorry, number 10, Under Siege. Number 9, The World Is Not Enough. Damn right. Number 8, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I'm on that one. I think that's what I'd be on. The Italian Job is number 7. Number 6, Titanic. Number 5, U571.
Apt.
4, Crimson Tide.
Apt.
3, The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Apt. I feel like I'm taking apt. Crazy apt. Pills. Apt.
Number 2 was Jaws.
Apt.
And my number 1 was Life of Pi.
Life of Pi, well done. So,
there you are.
All right, and just to reveal my 10 through 1, because you've already heard it. The Hunt for Red October at 10, 9, Deep Rising, 8, Under Siege, 7, Triangle, 6, Life of Pi, 5, The Poseidon Adventure, 4, Pirates of the Caribbean, : The Curse of the Black Pearl, 3, Captain Phillips, 2, Crimson Tide. My number 1, of course, has to be Jaws.
Jaws.
There we are. All right. Any honorable mentions that we have not mentioned today, Wayne?
Actually.
What did you shop off your list?
Waterworld. I like Waterworld. Counted. I liked Waterworld.
Absolutely would have been fine. About it. At least it would have fit the brief.
Well, I put Carlito's brain in there as well because of that boat scene.
Oh, come on.
Again, I'm working off the other brief. I also put Face Off in there.
Oh, Striking Distance. At least that was on the...
Striking Distance. Yeah. That would have been a funny one to throw in. Sorry. Okay. And I had Hunt for Red October as well.
Okay. I had Das Boot, Dead Calm, and The Perfect Storm.
Cool. One quick thing. Google Puppet on a Chain, which is a 1971 film, all right, with a boat scene in it, which is for the 70s. The way it's filmed is insanely good. It's people chasing each other around in Amsterdam canals and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And they're actually like, I've gone guns on two boats and they're like slowly stalking each other around the canals on boats. Very unusual for the 70s.
All right, wow.
And helicopter shots as well.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, well done. Cool.
That's Alice. What about yours? We wrap up every episode of The Countdown with a segment that we call, that's about your feedback, the Pop 10.
Beautiful.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Dan, the recent contributor on the Countdown podcast trivia, which is only available through Patreon. Dan said 28 days later on Twitter, number 3, Deep Rising. Number 2, The Poseidon Adventure. And number 1, first mention of Master and Commander, : The Far Side of the World. And he wrote :
I didn't like that movie. Hey, did you like it?
I thought it was fine.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Fine. Kat said number 3, Deep Rising. I love it. It's over the top, but just right. Wait.
What up?
Suck on.
Anyone can create a list from the listener feedback, Paul.
Well, this one I did not create. 2, Mr. Robert, such a beautiful movie. All-star cast, Henry Fonda, Jack Lemmon, Jimmy Cagney, and William Powell. Oldie but a goodie. Never heard of it.
Not me either.
Nor have I heard of The Enemy Below. What a classic. Great to show both sides of World War II. I must say, must be about submarines. Mm-hmm. I can only assume. Sam Hurley, friend from the Movie Reviews and Twinkies podcast and patron to the show. I dare you to leave out Jaws 2 weeks in a row, Paul. I failed that dare. And so did Wayne, by the way. Number 3, Das Boot. Number 2, Apocalypse Now.
It's a raft.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Okay,
so
yeah.
It's a pie, really.
And number 1, Pirates of the Caribbean. Curse of the Black Pearl. Nerd Lantern of Sector 2814. Sorry. On a Boat. Hunt for Red October. The Abyss. Crimson Tide. Are they on an undersea thing? I did consider that. Given that
if a submarine's a boat, then the undersea thing probably is too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Shit movies on a boat. Under Siege, Speed 2, and Under Siege 2. Under Siege 2 wasn't on a boat, was it? Was it on a train?
I think there was three.
No, there was no three.
There wasn't a three.
Under Siege 2, colon, Dark Territory.
Yes, there was a train. There was definitely a train.
Hendo for the Movie Journey Podcast, patrons of the show, great show as well. Number three, Life of Pi. Number two, Dust Boot. And number one, Jaws.
Nice.
Joey DiCarlo for This Always a Podcast. Again, great show and a patron of the show. Under Siege, number three, Cigar Watch. He wrote in brackets. Number two, Master and Commander. Number one, Deep Rising. Number one, Wayne.
What? This is a very popular choice.
Christy, first time, I think, contributor to the show. Number three, Christy. Muppet Treasure Island.
Damn, what a pull.
Yeah, would nice. You have had that one?
No, I didn't think about it, but it's a cool, like, would have been a cool one to throw in.
Number two, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Number one, The Poseidon Adventure.
Mm.
Now, Brad from The Cinema Guys, patron of the show. He's been on our, again, our countdown trivia.
Sure.
Have to give you Brad quality picks, he wrote. Mikhail's Navy. Waterworld.
Damn.
And Captain Ron.
Bro, I should, now I think about it, I should put that Kelsey Grammer one on. The
Down Periscope.
Down Periscope. That one.
Sure, that gets mentioned somewhere, but I'm not sure if I had it in here today. M at Verbal Diorama, another podcast you could check out, should check out. Muppet Treasure Island, Master and Commander of the Far Side of the World, and Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. And she said, why do boat movies have such long titles?
This is true.
Mm. Film vloggers said, half joking, half not, Speed 2, colon, Cruise Control.
No, definitely. Legit.
No.
Legit.
Two, Titanic, number three, Lifeboat, which is a Hitchcock film. And I wanted to put Waterworld to plug our latest episode, but I've been lying to you and myself.
You know, Waterworld got a lot of heat, but I did not mind it at all.
Mike Marlowe said, Jaws, the African Queen.
Mm.
Old school. And the fifth element. Technically, it's a space cruise ship, but who's counting? No. We are not counting spaceships.
Sounds fine to me.
No. Over the Facebook, it's going to be Stephen Croon, her Under Siege Cure Cigar Watch theme. I would play it again, but Wayne will fucking pop
fucking hell, pop so will everyone, man.
Number two, Besides Avenger, and number one, Jaws. Matt Evans had Contiki.
I thought it was actually about Contiki tours that you take different countries.
No, it's Con with a K-O-N.
Yeah, it's actually Jason Scott Lee, I think, and it's like some like fucking, if it's the one I'm thinking of, some native one. I can't remember.
Okay, no,
could be wrong, though.
Dead Calm and Jaws. Jonathan Kidd,
hmm.
Dead Calm, Billy Zane should have been the star. The Perfect Storm, I spent the next 10 years thinking rogue waves are going to hit me at any moment. And number one, Jaws. All other films are number two or lower.
By the way, I was completely wrong about Contiki. Like spectacularly wrong.
What is Contiki about?
It's like the fucking Scandinavian film or some shit. Hang on. Norwegian adventurer Troy someone. Yeah, it's got fuck
Jason
all to do.
Jason Scott Lee.
It's got no, like, there's not even any yellow people in it. They're all white. I'm Asian, everyone. It's full. It's fine.
With apologies to Matt, I think it was, who had that choice. And yeah, anyone else who recognized what he was talking about. Smiles Marty said, The Boat That Rocked. Eclectic mix of eccentric DJs running an illegal radio station on a boat playing just the best music.
Oh man, that movie. Okay, look, I love, who's that?
Smiley.
Oh, fuck you, Smiley. That movie sucks dick. The Boat That Rocked is one of the worst fucking films I've ever seen.
That was gold. Wayne thought that was just a regular listener, not someone we know. He's like, look, I love, who is it? Sarah. Sarah, you're great, but I just don't like that movie. And he changed mid-sentence to be like, Smiley, fuck that.
Get the Boat That Rocked.
Sorry, Smiley.
It's a piece. Shit, The Boat That Rocked sucks balls, man. It's so bad. Anyway, please go on. Keep going.
Number two, let's see how you go with these ones. The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Oh, no, I actually only saw half of it, but I like the idea of that one.
And Operation Petticoat, Cary Grant, Tony Curtis, Assorted Ladies, and a Pink Submarine. What more?
I actually
could you
do
ask
know
for?
That one.
And?
I recall as a kid, I was like, oh, these are girls. That's all I remember.
I'm just going to speak for Smiley now.
I'll explain, and I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
You're the balls.
Oh, God. Adam Allure said, Under Siege, Jaws, and Triangle. It's his number one top-level patron of the show. Thank you, Adam, for that. And lastly, Kahu, also a guest or occasional co-host on the Movie Reviews and Twinkies podcast, said, number three, The Perfect Storm. Number two, Ghost Ship.
Yeah.
Really? Ghost Ship?
No, but you know it's sucking. You said it sucked dick, right?
The first 5 minutes were awesome. Everything else sucks balls.
What the fucking was
that? And number one, Speed 2. And then he actually tagged in Sam Hurley.
I'm on board with Speed 2. Totally.
I, however, am not. And that is it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for your feedback on the show. And indeed, everything else, we love to hear from you. We really, really do appreciate it. Wayne, how do listeners give their feedback?
Why don't they search for the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast on Google or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. Check out the Facebook listening community links in the show notes. ccradio.com.au for Believe and Comic Confidential, the other two great shows as part of the network. And finally, of course, Podbean is where we host the show. All right, Wayne, what's happening for episode 325 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast? Knowing that I've already played the ABCD sound effect, so you've got some time.
What I like is that Paul vamped a little there and sort of stretched it out so I could open up the spreadsheet and say to you that we're doing the top 10 plot contrivances next week.
So moments where...
Let's just get this brief right.
Yeah, okay.
Let's just focus on it.
And that will mean you need to listen back to this, Wayne.
I'll just write it down right now. Okay, here we go. Now, a plot contrivance, Paul, is what?
Is where we legitimately don't give a fuck about the plot for a moment just to get the story from where it needs to be.
Ah, so it's a little deus ex machina a little bit, but not quite, because it doesn't actually save the movie.
It's a dumb moment in a film where nothing gets explained / we just have to jump to this point.
Oh, yeah, this is it. Yep. Oh, shit, why did that happen? Ah, yes, good.
Are we good with that?
I'm done with that. Yes, all right, I'm clean
on it. We are in greens.
Fantastic.
It is in stone, ladies and gentlemen, at least as so far as Wayne can remember 3 or 4 days from now.
That we talk about it, I'm sure I'll remember it.
Last time, you dumb cunt.
I mean a lot. I've talked about it for like more than one beat.
All right, that is it for episode 324 Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Hot damn!
When Wayne...
Fuck off! Don't even try and tie it back. It never works. Eat some dick.
Totally forgets a brief and just proceeds like he pretended to know what it was all about. We'll catch you next time. Yeah. Cheers. So that's halfway through this. Wayne, what is your number 5?
My number 5 is U571.
Wow, okay.
Now, I actually really liked the film, and I'm not quite sure why no one else liked it. It wasn't... Apparently...
I didn't hate it, but it's not on my list.
The British government chucked a huge shit at this movie, saying that it was... Yeah, that it totally, like, sullied the, the memory of those soldiers and things like that, because it's sort of...
McConaughey?
Yeah, yeah, Matthew McConaughey, man. And give me one sec. Sorry.
Sorry?
I lost my fucking notes because I totally swapped that one in.
What came out?
Wait, was it? Patriot Games.
Because I had a chase scene on the boat?
Yep.
Oh my God.
Remember what I thought the brief was? It was that.
I guess you're making this on the fly, these changes. Because that could have been, U571 could have been number 10, but no.
Yeah, I made the decision now.
And if for one second you think this doesn't make the end credits podcast, you'll be wrong.
Operating based on you not doing that, but it's over now, baby.